Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Hey, welcome to the 8th episode of Growth Marketing Today. In this episode, I have Turgut Jerbali, the head of growth at DeepXL. With a math and business degree from University of Waterloo, he worked at BlackBerry, then as a junior data scientist at a company called InMoment. He read a few AI journal papers and got good enough to become the head of growth at an AI company that's fast growing called DeepXL. In this episode, you'll learn three things. First, you'll learn DeepXL's secret on how they were able to lock in a big enterprise company as a client when they're just a small startup. That's pretty cool. Second, what kind of culture and mindset your team needs to do growth marketing. Third, how growth marketing relates to customer development, especially in an early stage startup. Now, if you want the high level outline and quotes from Turgut in this episode, you can go to growthmarketing.today/008. Once again, that's growthmarketing.today/008 to get the high level outline and quotes. Well, let's listen in to my chat with Turgut. Hey everyone, we have here Turgut from DeepXL. I'm here at the incubator space at University of Toronto. Hey Turgut, how's it going?
Very good, thank you for having me.
I know, I'm so excited. This space is so cool. It actually reminds me a lot of Velocity Garage in University of Waterloo.
Yeah, it just opened like almost a month ago.
Yeah, I know. It smells like fresh furniture.
Yeah. We are currently at OnRamp, which is at under College Street, which right. is working together with UFT and RBC. They are doing this for the UFT startups.
Nice.
It's a great space with three floors upstairs.
Yeah.
And a lot of the UFT companies can actually come together, work together. It's where it is. It's strategically close to Mars.
It is. I was like, Mars is across the street.
UFT is across the street. So yeah. It's fantastic in that sense.
For people who don't know, Mars is like one of the biggest like innovation hub in Canada.
Yeah.
Right?
It's like a sibling of Communitech.
And Communitech is like Silicon Valley of the North in Kitchener-Waterloo, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's where like a lot of the big startups like Kik and like Tomahawk Labs, Vidyard. All the cool stuff, like Pebble Watch came out of that place.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Before we start talking about DeepXL, the thing you're working on right now, let's talk a little bit about you. Maybe you can share a little bit about your career journey. I know a lot of people in growth kind of have a weird trajectory in terms of their career, right? So tell me a little bit about like how you got to where you are right now.
Yeah, for sure. I think because the growth hacking is a new thing, that's why you see people from different areas come in there. And that's why it brings different like flavors into the industry. So I went to University of Waterloo as you did.
Nice.
I studied math and business with minor in stats since from 2009 to 2014. I had a great time there. Like for those of you considering,
oh, that's so funny.
I will always be a big advocate for my school.
And it's funny because like a lot of people in San Francisco, when you say you're University of Waterloo, they're like, oh, you're the shit. Like,
yeah, I actually did a road trip once into California for a month. And I have friends working in all those big companies. And
right.
I went there and then you say University of Waterloo. This is what my friend said. People start like putting salivas on their mouth because it's that cool to be from that university.
That's so funny.
It's not as realized as in Canada,
right.
But Silicon Valley for some point. Twitter had 80% of their co-ops from Waterloo only.
Wow. It's absolutely nuts how much they know Waterloo there. Even like Y Combinator, like Sam Altman was like, he knows.
Hack the North.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I went there and I'm seeing that energy from Waterloo students. Like it was just a moment of pride. Like it's good to be part of that. But when I went to Waterloo, I had no idea that I would go into this kind of stuff.
Right.
Like I was raised in a traditional family. And it's like go to school, have a good career, which I was supposed to have.
And a career is like probably engineer, doctor.
Yeah, I did math. So.
You're going to be an accountant, right?
Yeah. So that only happened for the first 2 years. And after that, I realized it's not enough. Like I don't have enough pleasure and fun doing what I am doing at the moment. Although the school was great, the profs were great. So I started getting into working for telecom company in the summer. I learned lots. Before I got into my stats courses, I started doing statistics for the company. And I started like saving the company for $500,000.
Wow.
Like local currency. Right. Like, and I'm looking at, oh my God, like that was like for me to start and think bigger.
Right.
And I came back to school, did school. I tried different couple entrepreneurial stuff. I went to lots of conferences, met lots of people. That's where I got out of my comfort zone, where most people call it. And I'm still introvert, but I was the introvert to the square. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that taught me a lot of stuff. My networking in Waterloo grew so much. I was coming to Toronto here and now. Even I would have midterms. I would come to Toronto and go back overnight.
That's so funny.
Yeah, study for 2 hours and get the midterm and fail the midterm. Yeah. So I did that. And all of a sudden, I realized I am learning so much outside of school than inside school. And I was taking business schools at Laurier. No offense to Laurier, the stuff they were teaching me, but I was learning much more outside.
That's so funny.
Yeah, actually, when I graduated, I was at one of the Communitech, like, not conferences, but a lecture from a marketing professor at Laurier. I forgot his name. He said that whatever you learned at school, forget about it. It's garbage. And I say, thank you. I just graduated.
That's so funny. It's like, oh, there goes like, what, it's 60 grand or 40 grand down.
Yeah, but I realized that pretty early in my university life. So I actually got enough experience. Then he said that I was not as surprised, but it was like, okay, I think what I realized was actually true. And he had like 30 years of experience in the industry. So knowing that, we actually went to Startup Weekend. That was my first startup thing in 2013, Communitech. That was the first one in KW area from Startup Weekend. Actually, there's one happening this weekend in Texas, with Techstars in Toronto. So we went there. I had no idea. Like, I just went there. I actually met the co-founder of CEO, Ted Livingston of Kik.
Oh, nice. Kik, yeah, that guy.
He was there. Cool. And he was sharing his story that how he had the idea at BlackBerry. People didn't like it. And that's why he took it out and started that company, Kik, which we know of, one of the fastest growing companies in Canada. So it was good to see that people. And I didn't have any ideas. I didn't even want to go because I didn't know even what to expect. So I went there and saw a couple of people having different ideas. And then we came together and we want to do a platform for people to coordinate and organize pickup sports. And I was a big pickup soccer guy at University of Waterloo. We had a Facebook group which was disorganized. I knew it would be a great idea.
Right.
We did that over the weekend. And we were very successful. We had a great team. And we decided to continue that.
Cool.
Yeah. And back then, I was doing full-time school, part-time BlackBerry. And I just decided, okay, we can do this part-time because everybody had something to do, school, full-time job. One thing we learned from there, at least I learned from there, if you want to do startup, don't do it part-time. It literally means you are not doing anything.
That's fascinating.
That was my biggest lesson.
Right.
I'm happy that I learned that lesson early on because after that, I never did anything like part-time. Mm-hmm. Like if I did something, I was full-on. And it is my career. And then that's why I switched to entrepreneurship again with full attention, not just let's do part-time, let's see what happens. If you don't do anything, it's not going to happen.
So true.
Part-time is not enough. You will know. Lots of people will say that.
Yeah.
But for me to learn that myself was a great lesson. And I suggest everybody just to take that into their mind. Like you can have the idea and you can think about it part-time. You can validate the idea part-time, but you have to be full-time.
Yeah.
Otherwise, people don't take you seriously.
So true.
Yeah, I graduated from school. I had a great time. Actually, I was one of the few people who did not want to graduate. Because think about it. Like, university is the best time in our lifetime where you are so flexible. You have just classes here and there. And the rest of the time is yours. You can do and learn so many other stuff. Right? And I did that for the last 3 years of my school time. And I was so fascinated what I learned. My network just flourished. Like I came here knowing nobody in Canada. So I'm originally not from here. So that was eye-opening for me. And people were telling me, I want to go to MIT. I want to go there and say, You don't know the value of this school, man.
Right.
And those people are not coming to me and say, Sergey, you were right. This school has something in it.
Yeah, right.
That other schools don't have. And that's where I got this, not startup bug, but I realized my potential. That's
right.
How to say. And I got into 9-to-5 career job because I needed money.
Yeah, so does everybody. Where did you end up working?
It was a company called InMoment. It's from States, and they have a big office in Mississauga. I joined them as a data analyst, and then I switched into a junior data scientist kind of role for the past year. I had a great team. I had a great manager. That's one thing I had in my career, that I always had great mentors and managers. It's the biggest thing for me. Like, I learned so much from them. I still in contact with them, talking to them here and now. They are still in their career path, but they are proud of what they're seeing from junior employee. You know what I mean? I learned a lot there. But in my year and a half into my job, I realized I got to change. I need to do something else.
Yeah. What was it? It wasn't fulfilling anymore?
See, it was like the same thing that was happening in my second year of school. Like, it was not enough for me. I wasn't learning as fast.
Nice.
Like, in my first year of job, I was leaving my job at 10 p.m. I was sleeping overnight on the desk. Like, I had these stories. Like, I was working crazy and hoping that this would lead somewhere, but it wasn't. Like, I was seeing that no matter how much effort I put into this job, it wasn't going to get me there where I want to go. I learned cool technical skills. I realized the field of data science in that job. I did work for like big companies like Starbucks, McDonald's, Pizza Hut.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so I had a chance to work with these large companies, work with the large data sets and see this potential, where it can go. And I decided, okay, I want to try something else. While I was working full-time, I started doing overnights. I joined an early-stage incubator called Founder Institute.
I see, I know.
That's... Yeah, which started in Silicon Valley, nice, in over 100 countries.
Right.
And they're pretty big. That thing changed my mindset completely. Like, I thought I knew what being entrepreneurship was, and I did not.
Right.
That, let me put it that way. Over the 4 months, I had a pretty cool idea.
What was the idea?
I was trying to build a platform for personal trainers to connect with their clients.
Nice.
To be able to schedule, do the payments, all that stuff. And also not to depend on big box gyms like Good Life, LA Fitness. Because first, they were way too expensive for a client.
Very expensive.
And the personal trainers wasn't being paid enough. Like, let's say person trainers were spending 10 hours in there. If they trained only 3 hours, they get paid for 3 hours only. So like $100 if you pay as a client, only 20 goes to.
Yeah, I heard about that.
So there was a huge potential. Like, person trainers were going up and down. But as I dig deeper, I realized it's not just this platform that I care about. It's more of a big mind shift that I care about. Like, health, the way people live. Because this thing is not in people's life. People go to gym to do their stuff, right? But I was posing a different value set, which I didn't think people were ready.
Right.
I didn't think I was ready. I discovered the problem enough. So I thought, this will take me forever to learn and do this company. And I was limited on my resources. And I decided to quit my job first.
You quit your job?
Yeah, I quit my job.
That's bold. That's a bold step.
Yeah, and then 2 days after I got married. So this was all planned.
Okay, so you quit your job and then you got married. Like, talk about being risky.
Yeah, so I quit my job. My wife now and fiance back then, she knew I was going to quit my job.
Okay.
She knew I was going to go into risky stuff, but she has the same mindset as me. She's an entrepreneur herself. She's a CEO of an AI company for immigration called Destiny AI. So she's in the same space.
Okay, so it runs in the marriage.
I'm kind of like advising them as they are going on.
Uh-huh.
And they are pretty successful for what stage they are. Yeah, so I told her I'm going to do my job. And we came back to Canada after honeymoon. And I met the Pixel founders at FI, Founder Institute.
Oh, okay. So that's how it goes back.
Yeah, I went to them and said, guys, I know you guys need growth marketing stuff. And I have a huge background in data science. I know what AI is. I actually understand it, not just say it. And I want to get into more business because I want to connect my technical and business background. and I am also planning to be a CEO in the future.
Yeah.
I will have a lot of things to learn from you guys. And they were serial entrepreneurs themselves. So it was a great opportunity for me to get into this.
Learn.
And I was thinking maybe I will do it for like short time, 6 months, because I decided to take on equity, not pay. So
also,
I was having side jobs to pay for our bills.
Yeah, that makes... I find a lot of entrepreneurs do that. They're like, fund their what they love to do.
Yeah, and it's tough. It's tough. It has been almost a year with DeepXL. And working 60 to 70 hours is like natural for me. And when I had the full-time job, I was just working from 9 to 5 thing with my overtime. But this was different. And I had to juggle the stress of being a startup, the stress of surviving, which is so hard. Like when my friends tell me, I want to do this, I want to do that, that excitement goes away fast. The moment you realize this, right? Actually, the first day of Founder Institute, the co-founder of Blue Cat Network, which got sold recently for $400 million, is Michael Hyatt. He said that, don't do it. Like, it was first class.
Right.
And there were like 60 people who were trying to get to do this.
Right.
And he said, don't do it. I don't advise you to do this. And here's why. And I'm listening to him and everything he says. It makes sense.
Right.
But you don't feel it.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like, if you don't do it, you will never understand him fully. That was it. Like I said, okay, I think you're right, but I have to do this. Now I feel him, you know? It's tough. And if you have something better to do, go do that. Like, it's tough.
Right.
You have to have your heart in it. Otherwise, this is not going anywhere. Like, I have seen so many people quit over their course of life.
Right.
Whether Founder Institute or other entrepreneurial journeys. So that's where we are at. We are currently growing. When I joined, we had no customers. The product was ready, but we had no customers. We have now over 5 pilots with pretty big Canadian and international companies. Probably by the time you start releasing this podcast, we will be on the news for bigger projects.
That's cool, man.
I can't mention them right now, but
yeah.
So
you'd have to kill me if you told me.
you can get into more details about those specific like growth related stuff, but that's how it all happened and I came here.
And I really liked how you said you have to have your heart in what you do. And I find like Bob said, it's like you do your best work when you love what you do, and you've stuck around for a year now with DeepXL. I'm guessing your heart is into this.
Yeah, like the first day I was like, okay, I will just do this. But the more you're in it, the more you stick to it.
Right.
It becomes your thing.
Yeah, it becomes part of life, I would say. You breathe and eat and sleep.
It becomes your identity.
About it.
People start noticing you. Like, I started getting in the summer offers from the other AI companies. I tried to keep up with all the competitors and AI players in Canada, especially. And on the call, some of them would be giving me offers because the specific talent they need doesn't exist. Like, you can get and train them, but they are started. They have to grow fast. And then I realized, okay, what I'm doing is correct, right? I'm on the right path. I might not be a big success right now, but who cares?
Right. You will be, right?
That's the stepping stones, right? Yeah. Steve Jobs said this, right? When you look forward, you don't see it, but you can connect looking backwards.
Right. That's so true.
Yeah. And like looking backwards, see how many things are connected. But back then, it was like random stuff I was doing.
Yeah. And that's what I find about growth is like this job didn't exist like 5-6 years ago, right?
Yeah.
I'd like to talk about DeepXL. What is DeepXL? Like, why is your heart so into what it is now?
Yeah, so just brief elevator pitch about DeepXL is we are an AI company trying to help medium to large enterprises automate their repetitive text handling for customer inquiries. Let's say customer support.
Right.
Every day, these agents would get the same questions over and over again. Yeah. And there's a huge cost, there's a huge time delay, customers aren't happy as a result. And we try to improve that, try to change the game completely in a sense that we want to put AI into it and help agents and companies serve their customers better. And we see this coming. And a lot of buzz around AI already.
It is, and super hot, yeah.
Let me tell you, be aware of those AI companies out there. Yeah, because it's tough. Like, the technology is nascent, although it's 30 years old, this Geoffrey Hinton's inventions, but the industry is new. The hype is so much overhyped, I think.
Yes.
You have to be careful when you're talking about AI, but knowing, serving this customer, we see that there's a huge value where people are saying the AI will eliminate jobs, but I think it will improve people's life significantly, like their work lives, because you don't have to do those repetitive jobs. Even when I was working as a data scientist, part of my job was repetitive, which could be fully automated, like fully. And all you see all these inefficiencies in these companies like all over the world. There's an exception to that, which AI can help. And there's a huge potential, and the customer service is one problem, big problem that we are trying to tackle.
It's a huge cost for a lot of
companies, right? Like
having good customer service.
Yeah, it's huge cost, and people, these companies are missing a lot of good data.
Yeah.
Because you're having this chat, but there's no technology analyzing this chat. Mm-hmm. There's no structured data to for you to look at what the customers are saying.
Right.
I heard like telecom companies in Canada like learn cool stuff by having AI in place, where people started saying stuff, like when you're chatting, people say all sorts of stuff. I mean, you look into the trends, you say, oh my God, my customers are asking for this. We don't have this. Why? And then it becomes a huge marketing value.
Right.
And then you can actually do growth and all that stuff on top of it as well, right? So there's huge value, but you have to start small. Like,
yeah.
In this industry, you have to start small because it's too big what you can do. But if you start too big, good luck. Yeah, it's going to be tough for you to get anywhere. So advise our company that we work with. Start small, do the pilot fast, learn from it, and do the next thing.
Nice.
Build on top of it. And that also allows us to grow fast too. Otherwise, the companies will take forever to sign just an NDA and a contract.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
Especially your company.
Yeah.
What does your role look like there? I know your official title is like head of growth. What does that look like on a day-to-day?
Yeah, so initially when I joined the company needed to outreach the companies out there to showcase their RD Pixels technology, and we had nobody doing that. And me having that interest in there, and I was taking a course from a Silicon Valley guru on growth marketing called Dominic Coriel. And I took his course.
What course is that?
Dominic Coriel. It's Gimme Growth. And I highly recommend for people who are starting it.
Nice.
And he would come to Toronto here and now. I took that course and I said, okay, I think I can do a few stuff for you guys.
Okay.
And I read a couple of books about the different channels we can grow on and different things we can do. But we had almost no resources. So I had to be efficient too. So I read this and people are doing Facebook, LinkedIn, media outreach, but we weren't ready for all those big scale things. So I started doing email campaigns, reaching out to different sets of companies, which I identified like 50 or 100 of them, and try to learn how they react to my value proposition. And from there, we learned lots. People started talking to us. We got on the calls, we got in the meetings, and we started learning. So part of the growth hacking is the learning from your customer. Growth hacking is part of customer development, I think.
Right.
Not everybody will think that. Maybe in a big scale, growth hacking is just growth hacking and trying to reach out to your customer. But initially, it's customer development, growth hacking goes hand in hand. And we were learning from our customer what they are looking for, what kind of language they're speaking, what type of problems they have. And we soon found out that it's not their budget issue, it's not their need. Like, everybody has some need. Like, these companies, everyone has some AI need, whether we can help them with or not, that's another issue. But they needed to be educated because there's so much hype.
Yeah.
You don't know what's true, what's right, what's wrong, because whatever these movies are showing around and the news, it's like
a Minority Report. Like,
what we call is the generic AI, which is still not in the industry, and I think it's at least 5 to 10 years away. So they think AI can handle everything. And good luck to us to manage their expectations, right? So learning all those and then improving our growth hacking and reach out to these customers again to see how we can get them. Like, we can get them and just talk to them. It will be nowhere, but we need them to do some stuff with us. So that's where I started with email campaigns. I learned a ton, and then we started being more direct. Now we've learned a few things about our customers, what their needs are, especially what industries to tackle, what not. Like, initially we were going for retail, finance, telecom, you name it.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't want to limit it, right? We knew some stuff like airline industry, which is one, it's a tough one. Telecom is a tough one.
Yeah.
Retail, highly competitive. These are all the stuff we learned. Like, we knew none of that. And this growth hacking, it's like fast learning, basically.
Interesting.
Yeah. So we learned all this and we improved our communication to these customers. We improved our value prop. And we actually improved our product too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as we were doing this, and we saw a niche need that we could scale on. That's what we are doing now, right now. We're talking to customers and say, okay, when can we start? Like, small stuff, but now we are at that point. Like, you don't have to explain everything. Like, we tell, we have this for you.
You're very like, now you have like, this is what I need to talk about, and it's like easy.
And they say, okay, when can we start? Over the past 2 weeks only, we got into the radar of 4 big companies in Valley and here.
Yeah.
And they all want to do something. It's not in a place, let's talk about it. They all want to do something with the product we propose. So that's where growth hacking and marketing helps.
Right.
And I always think bigger in the sense that it's not just my only job. I would do customer management, project management, here and there product management too. So just getting them all together and do a proper growth marketing, because growth marketing will change for every company. We are a B2B. Our gig is different. We can't just do Facebook ads.
Yeah, that's true.
Because our customers is not living in Facebook ads.
Right.
LinkedIn is tough to reach out.
Hard.
Yeah. And all of these social media platforms are saturated, as you would know. So you have to look for new ways. So I started writing, and that's another way of me reaching out to my customers.
Right.
And my first article got to, like, it was because of it was niche. The Chatbots magazine, one of the biggest AI topic thing on Medium, published my article on there. And I got a lot of attention from there. Actually, had an investor call me.
What the heck?
Yeah, because of the article. And a couple of customers reached out to me because of that. And then I realized the way I can communicate to them is through understanding their problems.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest challenges in the industry, it's not just our company, but all the other AI companies, the part of education, and also how to work with startups.
Yeah.
And there was a large Canadian company we were talking to. They have 25,000 employees, more than that.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And everything was good until the final point. We made the proposal and everything. And you know what they say at the end? We don't know how to work with startups. And you were surprised like hell, like, really? You did not expect it, right?
Right. No, that's absolutely crazy. I think that's one thing that you said. You said something, you said growth is about fast learning. Is that what you see the difference between like growth marketing or hacking versus just traditional marketing where like, let's just do Facebook ads or let's just do this and that? Like, is that what you see is like one of the biggest differences between the two?
My opinion will be mine, but here's my take on this. I think marketing is more mature way of communicating, and it's not just your product, but it's also your company. All that branding comes into it. But growth marketing, I think, comes together with product.
Mm.
It has to built into your product in one way or other. So it's not just overall thing, but how do you grow your product, like customer base, by having your customers using your product. So the only way of doing that is improving your product, learning from your customers, and applying into that cycle, like the lean cycle.
Right.
So that's where I think is the biggest difference. And growth marketing is more so for taking different channels and learning from that. And then once it becomes mature enough, you call it marketing.
Yeah. I think there's also still value in doing customer development for larger companies. I think it becomes to the point where they lose touch of what their customers care and hear and value. And that's what I heard you said. did really well in the beginning was, what did my customers care about? What did they really value? What were the
things they were looking for? What was their pain points?
Yeah, I think these large companies are also starting to realize that it can't just be. I think the product life cycle, I can give you an example from my times at BlackBerry. From time it took Playbook from its initial stage to market launch was delayed by 2 years.
Wow.
2 years. 2 years in startup's life is maybe millions of startups will be created and just busted, right? So I think these companies are realizing that they can't be like that. They have to act fast. So they are introducing these programs called innovation programs into their business, but they're still having a lot of problems. I actually did a lot of research around that too, to understand why this is not working. Like, there's huge data supporting that people, as it becomes innovation theater,
innovation theater, I like that.
Steve Blank famously called it.
Yeah.
Because these companies get excited. Oh, let's do something.
Yeah.
And I have seen a real example of this. I can't name it because it will be
embarrassing.
No, they can come and sue me.
Oh my goodness, okay.
Yeah. It becomes theater because they put this innovation team apart from everything else.
Right.
When you know like how you have to involve your product guy, marketing guy, legal guy, HR guy, all in one place or in one room to bring something into fruition. It's like they put innovation in, I don't know,
somewhere off in Communitech.
Silicon Valley.
Or Mars.
Communitech, Mars.
Right.
I think something will happen. It won't. And it's not happening. There's huge data. And 500 Startups actually did a big report, 50-page report on this. They can go research and read that. And it's like embarrassing how these companies are failing on that because innovation is never the priority. So when we go talk to these customers, they say, oh, we have to do this before we get to you. You have to do this before. Like, we are never the priority. And you have to solve that problem. I understand that small things will not be the priority until it is, but you have to have a roadmap for that to be. So there's an author of Architecture of Innovation from Josh Lerner.
Yeah.
He's a Harvard professor. He says, he proposes the best way for innovation programs to work is to marry the R&D of corporates and the VC mentality together. So VC, what's the VC mentality? Do a portfolio approach, invest in 10, 20, 50 companies and hope one or two will come and become unicorns.
Yeah.
And the R&D strategist try to find new things, but you don't know how to bring that into your business, right? So the urgency of the VC mentality and the expertise from R&D, once you marry them up, it becomes something valuable. And what I see is from same report, 500 Startups report said that the best and meaningful results coming from innovation programs are the ones that does 50 pilots or more a year.
Wow.
50 pilots.
Right.
It's like one pilot a week a year. Right?
Right.
So if you want to get something meaningful out of your whole innovation thing.
Right.
And even this change of complete mindset, oh my God, like this is actually correct. Like this is the same thing we do for our startup, right?
Right.
We reach out to customers, we learn, we improve, it's the same. And they have to do the same. But unfortunately, they're not seeing that. So part of my job is to actually educate them. So my next article will be on this topic to tell them the innovation dilemma of these programs. Not leading anywhere, but actually there's a solution for that. Like there are companies like Nestle, General Motors, Visa doing this successfully.
Yeah.
And they can actually go look at these companies to learn. And because this is part of growth hacking, the growth marketing for us too, because once we show them they can do it, so many different companies will come to us, teach me how to do this. This is another way of growth marketing. And this is different ways that nobody's trying to do that you have to find out.
That makes sense. And I keep hearing this
whole like bed of learning. And this is not just in this chat.
I find learning happens most when you fail.
Exactly.
And the problem with a lot of companies is that failure is somebody gets fired, right?
That's a huge problem, yeah.
Right. It's a huge, and I'm sure when you started sending out those emails in the beginning and you were doing growth, you were like, oh shit, this isn't working. Let me tweak something.
Yeah.
But if it did work in the first step, you would be like, oh, what worked? Right? You're not sure. So like, how do companies and how do like growth people embrace that culture of learning, and failure is a step towards the learning, not necessarily a bad thing?
Yeah, it's about culture and the mindset.
Yeah.
If the company doesn't have the culture, this will not happen. If the people doesn't have the mindset, this will not happen. So you have to have that mindset that this will fail. This will most likely fail.
Which is scary. A lot of companies, they don't start something until they're like...
Even for startups, it's scary. Think about the pilot we can do, can fail. But the way some of the companies we work with look at it, it's like, it's okay if we fail. Let's fail fast. Mm-hmm. We are actually working with some of the companies like that who are open to it. And we say, oh my God, you are my best customer. So there are companies doing it successful out there.
Right.
With the right people and right mindset, and the culture allows for them to actually work with startups and fail fast.
Right.
Because now you actually know what doesn't work.
Yeah.
Your next move will be much more stronger.
Hopefully.
More effective.
Right. And
like, at least you learn what doesn't work, right?
That's
you
true.
Are far ahead of the companies who doesn't even know that.
That's true.
So you have to keep trying to see what doesn't work and until it works.
Yeah.
This is you can see this trend in all these companies and startups.
Yeah. And that's what the process comes in. I'm curious what your
growth process looks like.
Like maybe in your mind what the growth process looks like.
Like for accelerated companies that you work with.
Yeah, so you mean from our standoff point or the customer point?
From your point. Like, how do you gain the learning? How do you gain the insight? Is there
things that you do?
Yeah, so we start from what is already successful, right? If you know nothing, do what is already working. Right? That's why I started doing email outreach, like cold emailing. We would sometimes do cold calling and stuff. It's not the best way, obviously, but you start learning. So you do stuff that works for most of the companies, and you pretty soon find out what specific piece of that thing works for you and the rest doesn't. You throw the rest away. And then from what you learn, you add on top of that. And you keep learning and add on top of that and on top of that. Right now, as I told you, like, we are doing less and less email outreach, more and more trying to understand customer and directly communicating that problem and how they can solve it. Then we find this potential that, okay, so many companies are responding positively to that. And then we do mass email.
Nice.
Okay, we have this. This is the problem. We can solve this. This is how you can solve it. And you let the people come to you rather than you going to them. So this is like, you start small, like doing random stuff. Paul Graham said this, right? It applies for startups, but it's hugely applicable for growth marketing too, that do things that don't scale initially. Mm-hmm. Like, go talk to your customer face to face, go learn and do pilot or something that you will learn from it. All right. When you learn and do all that, you have a huge knowledge base which you can apply and scale on. So that's where growth marketing comes in handy, because marketing, what they usually do is stuff that already works, that you know that will work. So that's a key differentiation between growth hacking and marketing. And the mindset of those two sets of people, totally different.
And I find like they're totally different kind of people.
People feel like personality-wise and
mindset-wise. Like, you can tell right away based on conversation sometimes. Yeah. Like, oh, that guy's...
I think the notion of marketing will go away in the sense that growth marketing and growth hacking, what we call now, or growth only, will take over marketing. Because you can see that things are changing so fast. Like, what was happening a year ago is not happening. It's not relevant anymore now. So you have to adjust to it, because technology and information is so readily available that everybody can take what you do successfully and implement it within weeks, if not days, right? So you have to be ahead of the cycle somehow. And that's not, this marketing is not the solution. At least the current paradigm and this mindset of marketing is not the right solution. So I think that will completely change.
Yeah,
growth hacking is already coming into play. Like, you become part of marketing, but initially growth marketing will be the
marketing. Growth marketing will just be marketing now.
Yeah, like they probably will drop growth because marketing is so old name.
Yeah.
But the way we do stuff within marketing
will
be more similar to what we do as growth marketers.
And I guess that would scare some people who are more in the traditional
marketing role.
Because more and more tech companies are looking for people who can adapt really quickly, learn fast.
Exactly.
Able to have a process.
It's always like that, right? Yeah. Somebody has to be kicked out.
I guess to all the listeners who are...
They can always learn.
Yeah.
They can always learn, which is a great mindset for millennials. I think they are more open to constantly change and learn rather than baby boomers. But they are going out of market anyway, so I think they are good.
That's funny. Can you share like an insight or like some kind of like, what's like one of the most surprising learnings that you got through your experimentation, through your process?
Through growth marketing?
Yeah, like you talked about finding that niche. I don't know if you can talk about it or it's like...
So the insight, I think I already mentioned, but I will try to give a summary of it. Like when you start, you don't know what you're going to learn.
Right.
So you have to be open-minded. Like if you think that what you do will result in a certain way,
right,
then you shouldn't do growth marketing.
Yeah.
Then it means you're not doing something right.
Right.
If it doesn't break initially, it means you're not taking enough risk. So with growth marketing, you have to take risks that so you can identify new opportunities.
Nice.
I think that's the key, where you have to take enough risk to actually learn something valuable.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's good insight.
And in particularly for DeepXL, is there any particular insight in the past year that you were like, man, that was good. I wouldn't have gotten there if I didn't do this.
Yeah, so initially, you also noticed like the media is so hyped with bots, chatbots.
Everybody's talking about it. There's a lot of money in San Francisco, Toronto.
We also started talking like that. We didn't know, right? As I told you, we started talking in a way that already kind of works. Right? And we were starting talking about it, and companies were... seeing us in a different way that we didn't want to see ourselves. Like a cheap company, you're one of the other bot companies. My niece can build a bot. Well, how are you different? Why should I pay you? And once we realized, there's something you have to fix quickly, right? So we started getting away from the chatbot industry. And we weren't really a chatbot company. We saw my founders, they have seen this trend way before. Like Facebook did. Like Giri, our CEO, he used to work at NVIDIA. He is one of the biggest provider of AI chips for this large companies, Google, Amazon, yes. Microsoft. And seeing all these cool projects, he already knew that the bot technology will not persist for so long because it's empty. Like, you know, inside is not strong. So we focus on advancing our NLP and deep learning algorithms technology. And all of a sudden, like around summer, springtime, we saw Facebook is shutting down their bot platform and actually opening up their NLP platform, natural language processing, if you don't know what NLP stands for. So we were already ahead of that because we already knew that was going to happen. And now Facebook, if you want to build a bot, it has natural language processing capability. So actually now you can process language. It's not like people will not press buttons only just to get through something, because the key thing is here conversational UI.
Yeah.
If you can't have a conversation, then there is no value in it.
Right.
And what's the difference between button-based bots on Facebook and an app?
Yeah.
There is no huge difference. So when we realize, okay, so we have to get away from chatbots. We have to showcase our technology that this is deep. This is something very valuable. So we started calling it digital agents, intelligent digital systems.
That's cool. Just the verbiage.
The verbiage, yeah. Even the verbiage. Oh, okay. You are something like intelligent. Okay. You know what I mean? It changes the perception. So still people are calling it chatbots. Like we are doing pilots. Like I keep telling them I don't like the word chatbots, but that's one key thing you learn. Like you have to get rid of the common notion that this bot thing is cheap.
Yeah.
So
that's the value of digital agent is
it's intelligent,
right? Intelligence.
And answer and response
and learn from it.
Learn from it. Wow.
Yeah, the real AI is the reinforcement, right? So
right.
If you don't learn, then what's the value of it? That's the key thing, that you can actually start small, but your knowledge base keeps growing and growing.
That's cool.
And that's how AI becomes more powerful day by day.
And that's so cool. That's a really good insight. I have been calling it chatbot.
Maybe
there are chatbots out there, but definitely DeepXL is not chatbot. It's a digital agent.
Yeah, we like to call ourselves, we are an AI company building natural language processing with deep learning. And then we get into details and, oh, okay, it's a chatbot. No, it's not a chatbot. We are not in the game of building chatbots. Right. We are in the game of helping you with the technology we have.
Right.
And that insight has ingrained now into product. And now it's ingrained to like messaging. And if you're going to launch ads or emails, then that particular insight from the failures in the past
exactly.
has carried through. This is the value of growth, right?
And it also is not ingrained into our culture.
Right.
Like, we punish anybody saying chatbot.
How do you punish them here? It's like, go to the corner.
Yeah. Like, give me a candy or something. You have to pay. Yeah. So you just try to, like, if you don't do it ourselves, how can we expect people to not to call us chatbots, right? So, like, we try to take all the learning and also educate everybody inside the company as well as the outside.
What's next for DeepPixel? Where do you see it as head of growth? Where do you want to bring it?
So we are in a critical stage of our growth where we have to leap into the next stage. We are also currently fundraising. And we have this critical pilot for us that will help us to get into the scale mode. So we learned all from all these pilots, from all these projects, conversations with customers, investors. The next stage is to how to scale this.
So now you're at scaling and automating phase that Paul Graham talked about.
Exactly. And it's a totally different game.
Yeah, I know. It's like,
if you talk in a year, I will have so many other insights for you. But
that's so cool.
This is going to be a different game. And I think we are just preparing ourselves for that.
Nice.
It's going to be much harder.
So that's cool.
Most companies actually fail in that stage.
Well, we'll see. I'm really rooting for DeepPixel now that I know it's a digital agent. Let me wrap it up then. Like, is there any promotion that you want to give out? Like, where can people find DeepPixel? And like, where can people find your writing so that people can
know more about
what
you're doing?
So our website is deeppixel.ai. So you can also see my articles there. And you can also follow me at Medium if you search my name, which is tough, but TurgutJabbarli on Medium. Yeah, so I try to keep active presence on Medium. I don't write as quickly as I would want, but the learnings take time and learnings and to digest it and actually do something meaningful for customers. It takes time, so that's why I try to write deeper articles, but slowly. So you can find me on Medium. You can find me on LinkedIn with the same name.
Cool.
And if you want to talk to us about how we can help you, then
any particular people, any companies that you're...
So we are, if you have a big customer service team and you have a chat in place, like anything text handling, we can help you. So we'd love to talk to you.
Okay. Awesome. Now, if my listeners can go to growthmarketing.today, I'll have your LinkedIn and Medium and your email if you want that up there so that people can reach out if they want.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. This has been a very valuable conversation.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Turgut. Have a great day, everyone.
Yeah, thank you. Have a good day, too.
Thanks for listening into this episode. One thing that Turgut said that I really love is he said the notion of marketing will go away in a sense that growth marketing will become marketing. Things are just changing so fast that what was happening a few months ago is no longer working. So marketing needs to move faster and be more experimental. It's really interesting that that's where we feel like marketing is going to go. Now, if you want the high-level outline and quotes from this episode, simply go to growthmarketing.today/008. If you like this episode, why don't you subscribe to this show on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also sign up for our Insider Club community at growthmarketing.today. to get the latest news and join our members only Slack community. And you can even get free stickers. Come on, who doesn't want stickers? If you have any feedback or questions, just send me a short email at ramley@growthmarketing.today. In next week's episode, we have somebody special. We have Peter Sum, who is the growth at Open Care, another growing company here in Toronto. With that, this is Ramley John from Growth Marketing Today. And don't stop growing.